All right, looks like the people joining have slowed down a little bit. So we'll go ahead and get started. This is the July 28th edition of the SUNY Library Shared Services update. And we'll go through all the things we've been working on over the past month. So we'll go ahead and get started. And I'll turn it over to Esta for the first couple slides.
Thanks, Shannon. Just a quick reminder that, sorry, my child is in the background playing things, that registration is still open for our upcoming Collaborating Across SUNY Libraries workshop. This is a workshop that's kind of focused on the human element of project management. So looking at things, best practices and frameworks to sort of facilitate project management from the sort of human perspective, the human element of it. This is facilitated by Galadriel Chilton. She is the Director of Collections Initiatives for the Ivy Plus Libraries Confederation. She has a ton of experience in libraries and technical services and in project management. So she has tailor-made this workshop for SUNY, and it's a really excellent opportunity to sort of hone your project management skills. So I will drop the registration link into the chat. There's more information on the registration page, and yeah, I think go ahead to the next slide. So just to give you a brief summary of the first CASEL workshop, which was focused on shared collections. This one was facilitated by Michael Levine Clark, who is the Dean of Libraries at the University of Denver. So we had pretty good SUNY representation for this workshop. I think there were almost 20 SUNYs represented. There was some asynchronous readings and discussion, and then asynchronous presentation that kind of focused on sort of the history of shared collections and challenges and successes in past shared collections projects in the US, as well as diving into, sorry about that, some specific strategies for building shared collections across SUNY. I listed some of the major themes discussed here, and I have linked on this slide a more comprehensive summary that I shared via Basecamp. So I think it was a really productive conversation, and just thank you everyone for participating. So that is all I have.
All right, thanks, Esta. And I just wanted to, so we talked about this in the July 23rd collections discussion, but I just wanted to let you know that this was something that was included in the new SUNY restructured deal. And right now, Esta, Mark McBride, and myself are working with Elsevier to operationalize this. But any SUNY affiliated author does get a 10% discount for APCs that is automatically applied to their APC charge, but Elsevier requires that we, so someone in SUNY verifies the affiliation. So we thought that it was the best idea to centralize this affiliation or centralize this verification, so different members will be able to do this and responsible for this on the SLSS team. It's taken a little bit longer than we anticipated because they had to understand our system that, you know, one central office or the libraries themselves don't pay APCs. It's the author or the department or someone other than, you know, the library. So what I think is going to be a value to, obviously, the 10% discount is a value. But what is of value is that Elsevier will be giving us a lot of information about what SUNY authors are publishing and where, both in open access and subscription models. And we'll be working on how best to distribute this information to all of the campuses to see, you know, what's of use, and how regularly we'll share this information. Any questions on that? We'll let you know when it's ready to go, and any sort of discounts between our getting this system set up and getting the and when our contract was finalized will be retroactively applied as well. So even though there's been a delay, there won't be any issues with getting that discount applied. So just wanted to give you a support update from our July meeting. And not sure why there's a Zoom link in there for the Films on Demand display problem. Sorry about that. But we did focus a lot on linking and content issues, and then looked at some other Primo problems. But we tried to focus mostly on content because after trying for about a year, we finally got somebody at a managerial level to show up from content operations. We have a good working relationship that I think we've developed by some, I guess, respectful but tense discussions over the last year. So I think we have a good relationship with support. Content operations, we've really not even gotten to the surface of that. I do give the person from content who showed up to that meeting a lot of credit. She was frank and honest with us. And we really said, you know, this is, why should we put any effort in this if it's clear that you're not resolving issues in anywhere near a time frame that anyone would be happy with. And she recognized that they have some bandwidth problems with, or some severe bandwidth problems with content support. Ex Libris has acknowledged this even at Aluna a couple of years in a row. They know it's a problem, they're working on it. I'm not trying to discount that it's a major issue. Content operations will be in all of our monthly meetings. So we're gonna try to really just focus on content for the near future. One of the things that they did tell us that was interesting is even in content operations, for content cases or Ulma Data Services cases, even if it's a high priority, since they have so much of a backlog, if it's something that is causing problems, you have to escalate it using the Ulma or the Ex Libris escalation path and the escalation email. Send us a ticket in LibAnswers if you don't know how to do that. But you know, if you're not getting traction and you've put something at a high classification, don't hesitate to escalate that. We've been doing that ourselves with anything that was a high priority. We started to escalate that, and then someone at a director level gets assigned. We talked a lot about Gale linking issues, which we're still having. So the Films on Demand, I think we got a faster resolution because we talked about it a fair amount, and they actually had a way to fix that, and I think that's been resolved. But the Gale linking problem still persists. We have someone who's supposed to be our primary point of contact at a higher level at Gale, and that person is working with someone at a higher level at Ex Libris. But I think both sides are acknowledging that this may take a few more iterations to get it completely fixed. That's not what anyone wants to hear. And we're suggesting that as this happens, that you take the action to hide Gale content if there's any other full text linking, because if Gale and Ex Libris can't figure this out over the next month, your users shouldn't suffer from that. And you know, we've let Gale know that this will devalue their subscriptions because they'll be getting used less through the link resolvers, in the hopes that this would be an incentive for Gale to help us apply pressure and look for faster resolutions to the variety of linking issues. Any questions on that from the July support? Quick update on, go ahead, somebody was.
Yes, this is Susan. It wouldn't be a an update if I didn't have a comment. and someday you'll miss me when I'm gone. But
I appreciate your engagement. Yeah.
Yes, I tried to be awake. But with that Gale Ex Libris, I mean, is it like Gale has to do a lot more work? Is it Ex Libris? Do they each sort of both equally, or?
I think there's issues on both sides. Okay. Gale linking in any link resolver is it takes some work to get it working, and even with EDS there were issues. But also I think a lot of this is related to the CDI. So I think that there is there's blame on both sides, and that's not to say that Gale's not trying to fix it. But we need to,
yep.
We need to say this is having a huge impact, and if you're going to iterate, you need to iterate in the course of days, not weeks or months.
Right, right. Yeah. Circle as many wagons as possible on all fronts.
Right,
right. Right. Great. Thank you.
All right. So, Gale was the only place. Yeah. And Holly, that's a great point. I'm not trying to make Gale the bad guy. There certainly are linking issues across other vendors as well. It's just that we've been struggling with the Gale ones the most, and we just want to make sure that this is getting to the highest level so that there's priority, put to this. But yeah, there's certainly a variety of other vendors who have linking issues. So yeah. So an update on the SUNY Library Accessibility Cohort. So Rebecca Oling from Purchase and Carly Spina from FIT are co-chairing this. Right now we're focusing on building shared understanding and some shared knowledge between the group. And then in early fall, so in the next couple of months, we're going to begin reviewing the VPAT's accessibility documentation for the commonly held e-resources. And then we'll be cooperating with the different stakeholders in SUNY to look at the processes and methodology that we have for reviewing so that we're doing the best we can with compliance and then making sure that this will meet procurement standards as much as there are any set in stone procurement standards in SUNY. So that doesn't mean that this is going to solve all 60 issues at all 60 campuses, but we're doing the best we can to communicate in a system that sometimes is a bit fragmented in how processes are rolled out and implemented. So we're trying to do our due diligence, and you should be hearing more and seeing more about the work that we'll be doing with going a step further from just accepting the VPAT to reviewing and analyzing the VPAT and any sort of accessibility conformance documentation. So I wanted to just give everyone a heads up that we're working on this. So a few of us have been working with an iTech web developer and the ATIS technology manager to try to get a system-wide solution for the self-check web application. So it's pretty much just an ability to set up a web page on a dedicated machine that if you don't have a self-check vendor or you don't have a self-check solution, that you can do this. That's not to say that it will have all the functionality of a self-check vendor. The link is here for the web-based application that Ex Libris has on the developers network. It's taken us a bit longer because we have to set up a proxy to hide the API keys that are being passed back and forth. And then we're working on that customization of the application. We're shooting for mid-August where we will have this available to libraries. We'll do the implementation. We'll give you a URL where you can set up the self-check application. Hopefully this will help you if you're trying to achieve contactless or reducing contact in any sort of checkout activities. So we don't have that specific date, but we're shooting for mid-August. And if you're interested, let us know, submit a ticket at LibAnswers, and we'll put you in the list of campuses who are interested. So we'll reach out first to you. We already have three campuses who we're going to start testing with as soon as we have a minimally viable product that we're ready to go with. Any questions on that?
Shannon,
yes.
I have a question. This is Lauren from Potsdam. The self-check ALMA application, this is without for people that don't have a self-check machine? Is that what you said?
Yes. So
really?
Pretty much how this would work is it's going to be a web page that it will have a basic check-in, check-out function. One would hope that you would set that up at a workstation and, a public workstation, and then people could check books out to themselves. Obviously, awesome. There's a whole lot of room for issues of, if somebody can guess someone else's credentials, etc.
Yeah.
They could check it out, but, I think you have to, it's as secure as we can make it. And thanks to Matt from ESF for sending us this a while ago, and we should have it relatively soon. But sorry, Lauren, you were going to ask another.
No, that this is, thank you. You answered my question. This is really brilliant. So, oh my goodness, thank you.
Yeah, and David put security issues with the API key. That's why it's taken us longer, is that we have to, we have to set up a proxy so that we're not passing the API key publicly between the workstation and ALMA, and that's what's taken us a little bit longer than we anticipated. Yeah. Yeah, so, I'm not suggesting that there won't be other things you'll need to think about, like desensitizing, et cetera. So it's not not nearly as slick as actually having a self-check application or self-check machine, et cetera, but it's what we can pull off. And OLIS has a server. There won't be any costs associated with this. So when we have it, we'll let you know. And then if you want it, you certainly can use it. Just a note on the EBSCOnet ALMA integration. So this is, if you're doing work in EBSCOnet, EBSCO will be working with SUNY, and I think they have a few other institutions they're working with too, that if you do work like renewals in EBSCOnet, that they'll pass that information into ALMA so you don't have to duplicate the work. We have SUNYs who have expressed interest, so we don't need any further interested campuses, and we'll be sharing out information as soon as we have it. Go ahead, Michelle.
Thanks, Shannon. You can go ahead. So the Primo August release, I put the link at the bottom of this slide, and these are just a few of the things that I wanted to mention. It's certainly not everything that's included in the release. One of the good things is that if you're trying to set up local resource types, you'll have multiple conditions that you can use. Before, it was really limited, and not all of the records you wanted to put in a type would fall into a particular category, so that's a good thing. If you're using a blank purchase request form, there's now going to be a way that if you own that particular item, that it will come up in the purchase request form and tell the person who's trying to order it or to request it that you already have it, which I think is great. One of the things we've been looking at for quite a while, and we brought it up as a problem in our, we have a top five meeting with support, and this was that in the SUNY shared catalog, if you had an electronic version of a book, there was no way to get a resource sharing request option in there if somebody wanted the print instead of the electronic. And this was a real problem because not everybody wants to use an ebook. In times of COVID they may, but most of the time they may want the physical item. So there is going to be a way where you can easily have a resource sharing request show up even if you do have the electronic. So that's a good thing. There's a way that you can now define peer-reviewed facets for your local content in ALMA, not just for CDI content, so that's a good thing. There were problems with suppressed physical locations items still appearing in the search results. This has been fixed. There's a did you mean option that wasn't running very well. This also has been fixed. And then this was a big problem. A lot of people reported this. Hang on a second. Where if you had a print and a electronic option for a particular record and it was deduped, you would lose the electronic piece of it. So this has also been fixed. And then many people also noted that if they tried to change their preferred record for deduping, that there were problems with that, and that is supposed to be fixed with the first update to the release on August 9th. So you can go ahead, Shannon. So for e-resources, I just pulled out a couple of things. These are mixed in with the rest of the ALMA updates that I'm sure that Maggie and Tim are going to talk about. And here's a link to the full list of the releases for ALMA. This first one will be handy for making purchase decisions. You can often get a list of all of the records that are in a particular collection, and now you can compare to collections that are already in ALMA or that you don't have in ALMA, so I think that'll be really handy. And then the second one, I don't have a good example for this, but they say that they've fixed some of the test errors that you were getting when testing your portfolios, so I thought that was a good thing. You can go ahead, Shannon. So CDI continues to be an interesting experience. Ex Libris is still doing a lot of changing and fixing, and some things are supposed to be coming in August, and my fingers are crossed that they really will be fixed. One of the biggest problems that we've seen is that if you have something that's link and record, meaning that both the search record and the link to the item are coming from the CDI rather than a link resolver collection, which is fulfilled by your ALMA portfolio activations. What's happening right now is that those link and record links are superseding any of your link resolver links. So something that, you know, maybe OA is showing up in your view online instead of something from EBSCO or from Gale or something that you're paying for, and that's a big problem, particularly when the link and record link is bad. So that's supposed to be fixed in the August release, and we're waiting for confirmation about that. It's not currently listed in the release notes, but Ex Libris says it's coming. They did try to fix it in July and had to roll it back because it broke some other things. Shannon mentioned the films on demand problem. What we found is that if you activate new link and record collections, you have to publish the database bib record in order to get them to work, which is not intuitive, and also is a problem if you don't want that database to be searchable in Primo by name. This is also supposed to be changing in August, and I will keep you updated in Basecamp about this. My hope is that it will work how the migrated link and record collections from the PCI have a little flag that just say publish in Primo. So I'm hoping that that's how this will work. But again, more information as we get it. We're still seeing missing collection names in these link and record collections. You'll just see something very vague like view full text in collection rather than view full text in films on demand or the actual collection. And that makes it really difficult to do troubleshooting if the link isn't working. So we are pushing, that was supposed to be fixed in May. I haven't seen any fixes yet. And we have asked in multiple places about when that is going to be fixed. The CDI is impacting Gale linking. When the article IDs are not matching what's in Gale, that can be part of the cause of the failure for the Gale linking, so we are pursuing that. And another thing we're seeing is that when it's doing the live lookup for ALMA for your view online links, if there's no ISN to match, for example, Kirkus Reviews, it doesn't give you any links. So that's also a problem. So we have several open tickets about all of this, and I will keep you in the loop. You can go ahead, Shannon. So one of the things we're going to start is an external resources task force. There's been questions or interest in getting a group together to look at how to bring in archive collections and what would be best practices. You know, do you want to do a digital import profile? Do you want to do discovery import profile? There's a really cool ALMA viewer where you can actually get these external records to show right in the full record. You can show a PDF, you can show an image. So what we'd like to do is get a group together to explore this. This is going to be heavy on the exploring and pulling together information and not so heavy on the like actual deliverables. What I would really like is some collections to practice with and get some more information about how this works. So we will be opening this up to volunteers. The link to volunteer is right here, and we will also post it in Basecamp. So hopefully there will be people interested in looking into this with us. And I think that's it for me. Yep. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, Shannon, you can go ahead to the next slide. So I just have a few updates. One is to announce we're going to be conducting a shared ebook DDA pilot over the next couple semesters. So we're looking to test a multi-campus DDA program on the ProQuest eBook Central platform. We had a conversation with ProQuest this morning. We're working through a pricing model and they're working on setting up how this would look in the back end. We're kind of talking through what it would look like in Alma. We are hoping to get it set up so that access to purchase titles is available for all of SUNY, regardless of who participates. And on our end, we plan to do to manage the vendor relations, negotiate terms and pricing, help manage the pool, as well as just provide support to campuses. And so right now we're looking for campuses to partner with us in the pilot phase. So that could look like contributing funding or testing workflow in Alma or the user experience in Primo. We're going to have an informational, an informational session in early August. And if you're interested in participating or learning more, send us an email by August 7th. I think if your campus is looking for a way to build your monograph collection in a format that's going to be accessible, even if the campuses close again, this could be a good opportunity to put some of your monograph funds towards that. I think especially in a way that kind of leverages our sort of collective power as a system. Okay, next slide. So another project we're working on is setting up Rialto trials for campuses. So Rialto is it's a tool that integrates selection and acquisition of several formats directly into Alma. So if you've worked with OASIS or Gobi in the past, it's kind of like having that embedded in Alma, but you have some more features because it's linking up to real-time availability, your fund availability, information on your holdings, and it's integrating directly into all the acquisitions. So we're having a demo next, let's see, Tuesday, I want to say, at next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Feel free to sign up for that. And again, we're asking if you're interested in participating or learning more about that, feel free to shoot us an email. We don't have a timeline on this. It's sort of at whatever pace you're ready, but we're happy to promote this as an option for campuses looking for a way to kind of streamline their selection process. And that is all that I have. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Esther. And Shannon, you can move on to the next slide. So I'd like to start by giving you all an update on where we stand with restarting physical resource sharing in Alma. We currently plan to resume physical resource sharing in Alma on Monday, August 3rd, which is this upcoming Monday. Right now we have 11 libraries who have told me they're ready to resume lending on that date. You can see the list there. I won't go through and read all of them, but I do want to say thank you to each and every one of those libraries who has told me that they will start lending on the 3rd. And I also want to point out that most, but not all of these libraries will also start borrowing again on the 3rd. So the way we've been handling this is I've been reaching out to libraries as they resume ELD service to see if they're ready to start borrowing and lending in Alma. So if you haven't heard from me yet, as soon as I see your name pop up on the list of libraries who have resumed or are about to resume service in Alma, or excuse me, in ELD, I will reach out to you. I do want to point out that if you want to start borrowing again, you really should be also willing to start lending again. If we get into a situation where we have a bunch of libraries borrowing and not very many lending, that's going to cause some obvious problems for the lender. So we're trying to discourage situations where libraries resume borrowing without lending, but we realize that that's not going to work for everyone. Like, for instance, I know Schenectady County Community College, their entire collection is inaccessible because of a renovation. So we would make an exception in cases like that. When I reached out to you, if you believe you're one of those libraries who needs that exception, we can discuss that. So Shannon, if you could move on to the next slide, please. We're going to need to use different ROTAs when we resume resource sharing to make sure that libraries who are currently lending articles but not books don't start receiving book requests too that they can't fill. So we're going to start things off with just a single ROTA of all of the libraries who are ready to start lending again. And as that ROTA grows, we will make adjustments as necessary. Something else I want to point out is that lending requests will no longer expire after 4 days. They won't expire at all. And the reason we're doing that is we want to make sure that as many requests stay in Alma as possible. And we realize that it's going to be a weird time for everyone. And things may slip through the cracks. So we're going to not automatically expire requests for the time being. And I will be using analytics to just keep an eye on things and catch anything that I think has slipped through the cracks. So there will be someone monitoring for that. I also want to let you all know that we'll be taking care of all of the configuration work needed to resume physical resource sharing at all of your libraries. I would ask you to refrain from turning on your borrowing and lending without consulting us, because that will create some issues. And I also want to just remind you all that we're going to see slower turnaround times and lower fill rates until things start getting close to being back to normal. In fact, I would compare this restart to the initial resource sharing rollout from last summer, where we only had part of the system lending. So we were seeing a decent number of requests not get filled because there just weren't enough lenders available. So before I move on, does anyone have any questions about our plans to restart resource sharing? Okay, doesn't look like we have any questions. So Shannon, you can move on to the next slide. Thanks. So I also want to give you an update on where things stand with article resource sharing. The August ALMA release included a fix to a letter that should allow download links to be delivered directly to the requester. Currently, the way article resource sharing works is when a lender fills a request, the borrowing library receives a PDF attachment, and then the borrowing library has to manually forward that attachment to their user. So hopefully with this fix to the letter in the August ALMA release, we can put an end to that and create a situation where once a lender fills a request, an email with a download link will be sent directly to the borrowing library's user. And that email will appear as, actually it will come from the borrowing library. So your users won't be receiving emails directly from other libraries. The initial sandbox testing we've done has gone well. Thank you, Yvonne, for helping me out with that. But we will need to do some additional testing once the August release is available in production, because there are certain things we simply can't do in the sandbox. So once that the August release is available, we will be doing some additional testing. We'll keep you all posted. And I'm really hoping that this letter fix will help us significantly improve article borrowing workflows, and that it may make ALMA article resource sharing a viable option for additional libraries in the SUNY system. So Shannon, if you can move on to the next slide. And lastly, I just want to give you all an update on where things stand with ALMA resource sharing with non-SUNY libraries. We have recently successfully tested article resource sharing with both the Connecticut State Colleges and University system and the MNPAL system in Minnesota. Unfortunately, we did run into some lending locate issues with CSCU, which I'm working with Ex Libris on resolving. No problems whatsoever with MNPALs. That's good news. And I also want to let you all know that both consortia have expressed a willingness to discuss the possibility of physical resource sharing with SUNY. We also met with the WRLC consortia. That's the Washington Research Libraries Consortia. So that's, you know, places like Georgetown, George Mason, George Washington, lots of Georges in there, American University, a lot of the big research libraries in the Washington, D.C. area. And they have also expressed interest in possibly doing physical resource sharing with SUNY. So this could really help give us additional resource sharing options within ALMA outside of our system, so we don't need to rely quite as much on OCLC. We're also continuing to have discussions about ALMA resource sharing with the CUNY system. Initially, we were talking to them at a system level, but it's looking now like we'll probably be starting out with just a handful of individual institutions. In fact, we met with the Graduate Center recently, just earlier this week. And then, so we'll probably try to link up with a handful of the larger CUNYs before trying to link up with the system as a whole. And lastly, I just want to let you all know that we're still on track to add Union College to our ROTAs sometime in the near future. I'm afraid I can't say exactly when that would happen, but I'm very much hoping sometime early in the fall semester we can start doing ALMA resource sharing with Union College. And we also still have interest with ALMA resource sharing from Nazareth, Ithaca College, and St. John Fisher as well, although they're not quite in a position yet where they can really engage with us on that, but they are interested in. Once things hopefully start to get back to normal, we can make more progress with them as well. So that was everything I had. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, everyone. Shannon, can you just move forward, please? All right, I just want to give everybody an update on the local subject heading initiative. Not much has been done, and I'm going to explain why. So I started doing it with phase two as planned. But then, you know, I was listening to the is it the California State, one of their online sessions was, you know, about this project. And it got me thinking because it was mentioned, you know, you could do it in the 650 second indicator too. And what happened with this was that we have a lot of campuses that don't actually display their 650s with their second indicator of 7 for fast subject headings and things like that. So I had to work on coming up with a script display norm rule that allowed me to display the subject heading if it had a subfield 2 of change the subject project and not show any other 650s with a second indicator of 7 for those campuses that did that. It took a few weeks to get that going, ran into a few trouble, worked with Ex Libris, and finally I was able to refine it to get it to work the way we need it. And what's really nice about this, well, it will streamline the whole configuration and it will make the end user experience more seamless. So doing it with a local, anytime you use a local display field, you have to create a local search in advanced, a local advanced search. So it takes it away from a typical search. So it would not be, the 690s would not be included with a subject search. It would be a local subject search. So now by changing the way I'm going to configure this phase two and phase three and allowing the subject heading to remain in a standard subject heading, it allows users then to just do a basic subject search without having to know when it's this subject, I have to do a local subject search, etc. So I'm going to update all the documentation that is on the Change the Subject Project LibGuide. And I will be in touch with all the campuses. I did do some, and I will be in touch with you when I've made these changes to revert them to the new configuration. And any campuses that have modified the display norm rules for subjects to omit 650 with a second indicator of 7 for like fast subject headings, for instance, I'm going to put in this rule that allows only the 650 second indicator of 7 with change the subject in subfield 2 to display. All other libraries will not have this. So if at any time you decide you want to omit other subject headings with a second indicator of 7, you would need to contact me so I could give you the proper display norm rule so that you can incorporate it. Does anybody have any questions about this? Okay. Can you please move forward, Shannon? So some of you may have noticed I posted to Basecamp there's something going on with OCLC's new process for their data sync collections. So when things were being updated, they were accidentally creating duplicate records as if they were new. And sometimes it was creating them 2, 3, 4, 5 times. So Binghamton brought this to our attention. So thank you to Binghamton for doing that. And I've been working closely with OCLC on this. So there was something with the match. Their match configuration in the new process. The new process is fine, but how it was matching records, it was not working as intended. And it was impacting all of OCLC libraries, not just SUNY. So they decided, they did change their match configuration, but there's still something off that they're still investigating because I'm working with them very closely. Because there are still some new records being created, even though they're not really new, they're just not matching properly, so they're being sent as new. But they're at a much slower rate, and very few. So I have very concrete examples I can give them of the original bib record with the newly created record, so that they can really dig deep and figure out what is going on. So in the meantime, all the SUNY collections have been set to staging for records that have no match. So what this means is there anything that does not find a match when you're updating your holdings during this time when they're trying to figure out what's going on, they're gonna go there. And OCLC is gonna be reviewing the records going in there to see if they can identify why these matches are not happening properly. Once it's been resolved, everybody, that piece of staging for upon no match will be removed from your collections. There's nothing anybody has to do. This is all being taken care of on OCLC side. Another piece that happened during this process is called DDR. It's their their duplicate detection and resolution process. So what this does is it will resolve issues like if there's matching records, merging and things like that. And it really seems to be self-correcting the problem. When it was still on, I was getting massive amounts of merges, which was ringing like something was weird going on for myself, that we had so many manually handling that I had to look at them because there was more than one match when records were merging. There were like, and even for updates, there were just so many matches. So they turned this off temporarily until they can figure out everything that's going on, but they're thinking sometime this week they're going to set DDR up. And hopefully that's going to merge all the records that have been created as new, even though they're really not. So I do have a set of all these records, and I will be paying attention that they are being resolved and no longer in the system. So if you do notice anything weird going on with OCLC, this is probably the issue. If there's anything else you see that's happening, you can reach out to me and let me know. I will keep everybody up to date and let you know how things progress once DDR starts being turned on again. And once they figured out the final piece of why some records are still being created as new, even though they have clear matches in OCLC. Does anybody have any questions? Great. Thanks. You can move forward, please. Just a reminder, the new deadline to the new exchange service for OCLC, this is for your data sync collections or for any other services that you have, data collections, any kind of services in OCLC that you're using, is September 30th, 2020. Any publishing profiles for every SUNY has already been configured to the new exchange servers. You don't need to worry about that. But if you have any other services that you need to make sure you update them, please do so. There's a link to their documentation. You can move forward, please. And now we're up to the release notes. So, oh, sorry, I didn't update my slide to say August. I apologize. So it is really August, not May, so please ignore that. The new user layout, as of August, it's going to be available. It's going to be available as, opt-in or opt-out. And so when people log in, it's still going to look like the old layout. It will be whoever has certification to take care of configuration on your campus. They can go in to choose the opt-in option or the opt-out option. Opt-in means that user by user will have the new layout added for them. And opt-out means that it will be applied to everybody and people can users can choose not to have the new layout. One thing I just want to let you know, as of about a week ago, when they did an update in the sandbox, that now the MD editor, the current one, utilizes the whole screen. So when I did the new layout, I did a session on the new layout a couple of weeks ago. I did mention that the MD editor did not use the whole screen. It was very hard to use because it really took away a lot of the workspace and you couldn't scroll and you couldn't see everything. This has been corrected. So if you're somebody who does cataloging or uses the MD editor, don't worry. You can decide in August if your campus decides to enable it in August to use it. Just be aware that with the September release, the new layout is going to be enabled in production for all users. And it's going to only be an opt-out version. So that means that when the September release happens, the new layout is what everybody's going to log into, and you can then opt out at that time to use the new layout and continue to use the old layout until January 2021 when that new layout is the default. So there is a link to the LibGuide. There's a new AMA layout LibGuide. So if you did not attend the session, this LibGuide is basically the information that I went over in the session. There's also a recording of the session as well. So if your campus wasn't able to attend or maybe missed that session, you still have availability to all the resources. You can move forward, please. Again, just please ignore my headings. I will make sure they get updated. acquisition. So you could only edit a PO line if you chose edit prior to the August release. But with the August release, you can now click view and there'll be an edit option that will allow you to then edit after viewing a PO line. If, always the if, you have the right user roles and the PO line has the correct statuses to be able to do this. Please move forward. Now resource management, there's a lot of changes that happened to the new MD editor in the sandbox with the August release. So when you're seeing the August release notes, the new MD editor, it's only in the sandbox right now. So all the changes happened in the sandbox. And if you're interested and you're not one of the campuses who, people from one of your campuses are not involved with, we have a group that is just testing out the new MD editor, just working through workflows, testing out how everything functions and new features. I created a LibGuide for this. So if you want, you can go look at it because it is open. It's not locked down. It's open for everybody to view. And I'll be adding more information as I go along and develop it. Another thing that has been happened in the August release is that the local control number as a local extension for community records. So you can now update bibliographic records in your community zone with a local control number, like an 035, if it's a vendor number, so that it can match better. So this is a possibility. It allows synchronizing bib records that originate in the community zone with third-party catalogers, catalogs. So your vendors send you files. So if you put in the local, NO35 with a local extension, which means subfield 9 local, you don't see that. It just gives it the little local symbol next to the field. You're able to do a match when the vendor sends you updates if your files are getting updated in that format. Next, please. So there's this, Michelle did mention this, identify records matching to AMA records. So you can match vendor records to existing records in AMA to help with purchasing decisions. So that was already mentioned. So thank you, Michelle. And you can also now search by titles by call number range. So this is kind of cool. So, title searches, like all titles, physical titles, electronic titles, portfolio titles, anything that has a title in it as a search will allow you to do a call number range operators. They were added to an advanced search. So it will allow you to do a range. You can do less than, greater than, greater than, equal, greater than, less than, and it can be to Dewey Decimal Numbers and Library of Congress call numbers. Next, please. And I just wanted to mention some upcoming training that's happening. Acquisitions late fall, Susan and I will be doing some advanced acquisitions course to just go over some more of the more advanced acquisitions functionalities that are available, such as, import profiles, APIs, and various things like that. Resource management, some training. So I just want to announce, and I posted to Basecamp, I'm going to be doing a new MD editor series, and it's going to be kicking off August 25th. And this is really navigating the MD editor. I wanted to do it prior to the release of the MD editor in production so that you have some time to at least, see what it looks like prior to it just showing up in production. And then from that point on, I'm going to be doing bi-weekly training sessions with bi-weekly Q&As for the session, each session, just so that people have an opportunity to attend the session, absorb the information, and then come back the following week. If there's a Q&A, they can ask any questions, and we can look at different things that come up as a result. So I'm still working on finalizing the schedule, and I'm adding it slowly, but it's not been published to LibGuides. So once that is available, I'll post it to Basecamp, and it will also be available in LibGuide. And the final thing is also in fall of 2020, I plan to start doing normalization rules. Just want to let you know that Ex Libris is going to be doing two sessions in August if you did not see that, but you can sign up and register. There's one on normalization rules in AMA, and there's one for Primo VE. So, so thank you.
Hi, everybody. I just have a couple of slides on analytics. I know we don't have that much time left, but I just want to point out that the August release has some exciting new developments. The first line, I know it says holding details, physical items. I copied and pasted that directly from Ex Libris, but I think holding details needs to be flipped with physical items. I think what it's saying is in the physical items subject area, the holding details and bibliographic details dimension will now allow you to search on the 008 and leader. So that's something that I know customers have been asking for a while. And it's, so that could be interesting and that could be helpful. So I just wanted to point that out. I thought that was important to notice. Go ahead, Shannon. So I'm sure you're all aware of the upgrade. Ex Libris has already completed what they call the Oracle in-memory performance upgrade in analytics. Supposedly reports will run faster. Unfortunately, while they were rolling it out, some of you may have noticed that reports were actually running slower, but but I think that's all done. So hopefully you should see a noticeable performance improvement. And if you're not, or if you're seeing slowness, feel free to open a Salesforce case. The upgrade to the back end of analytics, the Oracle background, Exhibus is upgrading it to the Oracle Analytics Server. And that includes what they're calling data visualization. So there'll be some changes with that. We are scheduled to be upgraded in the fourth quarter. So that's anytime after October 1st. Hopefully they'll give us notice because there are some things that we will need to do to prepare. So that brings me down to the next slide. So look for an announcement about a webinar that the Analytics Working Group will be doing on August 12th. We will be going over the basics of what the upgrade will involve and what you need to do. The most important thing is any reports that you currently have stored in the folder called My Folder, that's the folder that is only viewable by the login that's associated with your login, not the shared institution folder, but any reports in My Folder will not get migrated to the new version. So those will all need to be copied. So we will cover that in the webinar. We will also cover, there'll also be a freeze period when Exlibris announces the actual dates for when we get upgraded. There'll be a week or 10 days freeze period where I think you can run analytics, but just anything you save or change will not be migrated. And the webinar, we will also talk about the shared folders and the reports that we have in there and how to use them. And that's it.
All right, I just wanted to give you a bit more of a overview of training of what we have going on. We've talked about most of this already. So we have two sessions scheduled for CASEL. We're thinking about a third, not sure whether we'll do that or not. Advanced acquisitions also coming in the fall, as Maggie indicated. And then we're looking at some additional advanced analytics sessions, focusing on different functional areas. And then looking at the MD editor and the layout sessions in those areas. And then we will be repeating the e-resources course that was offered in the spring that had a lot of demand, that will be, you know, likely mid early September, but we'll be offering it in the fall. And then as many sessions as we think are appropriate on the cloud apps, because we're looking at the different cloud apps that we think are relevant to libraries. And then as we find that there are needs for functional area sessions, we'll do those. And then also some focus sessions in collections on liaison librarian models, you know, how to look at those at your campus, and some sharing of those among SUNY, and then current trends, alternative access, and then data-driven collections. And then we just announced these reopening webinars. So we'll do four sessions beginning next week. And these are the tentative sessions and topics. But they'll be Thursdays at 2:00. And then if we need to adjust any of the topics after the August 6th, we'll do so. All right, any questions, anything? It's good that we're keeping Susan awake even though it's warm. Any questions? Feel free to unmute yourself or type in the chat.
Well, I have one last question about the acquisitions course that Susan, I think, offered in June. Did that happen? And did we miss, were there, for those that didn't participate, she was going to share some information from that. Is that available? And we've just missed it.
No, you didn't. I first distributed the links to the course members.
Sure.
And yeah, I'll be posting those.
Okay, good.
Next week.
Perfect. Thank you, Susan.
I had an embargo period on
that. Yeah. Oh, okay.
As it were.
Okay, because
So the feedback from the migrating to full acquisitions, the feedback from that is going to help us inform the advanced sessions that Maggie and I are.
Perfect. So, perfect. Yeah, it's you know how easy it is to miss announcements on Basecamp.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. No, you will see the link on Basecamp.
Perfect.
Really get to me. It'll be on the SLC training site. Mm-hmm. Be in both places. So thank you for asking.
Oh, yes. The Susans have to stick together.
That's right. That's right. Each other's back.
All right, we have time for one last question. It's 4 o'clock, but will any last question?
I have a question. This is Jill from Optometry, and my question was regarding LibAnswers and LibChat for the campuses that didn't have it that got access to it. I think it was just kind of this vague for the duration of the COVID crisis. I was wondering if there's an endpoint or a this is what you need to do if you want to continue to have it. I just, you know, don't want to invest too much more time into it if it's going to be ripped away.
Right. So the context is that the SLC paid for, I think it was something like 4 or 6 months of LibAnswers access when the pandemic hit. But there's no funding for the SLC to pay for it after that period. So I can go back and look when exactly those expire. I think that was presented in the communications, but I'll definitely look to verify when exactly that is too.
Okay, thanks. That would be great.
Any other questions? All right, I'll stop the recording. Have a great day, everyone.